from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Former San Francisco supervisor and mayoral hopeful Bevin Dufty joins us to discuss his new appointment as the homelessness czar of San Francisco, which he now calls the director of hope. Dufty says we should be more lenient with homeless alcoholics and allow them shelter even if they haven't quit drinking. And he has a host of other innovative ideas on homelessness, which we'll discuss with him. Forum is next with your calls, emails, and online questions and comments after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. Former San Francisco Castro District Supervisor and mayoral candidate Bevin Dufty is being called the new San Francisco homeless czar, but he prefers to be called Director of Hope, Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement, a program dedicated to bringing new innovations for San Francisco's longtime homeless problem. Named to his new position last month by Mayor Ed Lee, Bevin Dufty joins us in studio for this forum hour to let us know what he envisions as new and progressive ways of ameliorating the ongoing issues facing the city's homeless population in San Francisco and beyond. Celebrated his birthday on Monday and often can't be introduced without mentioning that he is the godson of Billie Holiday. Welcome to the program. Good
Thank you, Michael.
You. Good to have you here. I guess let's begin by talking about, what you envision, as I said. First of all, why not be called the homeless czar?
Well, I think for many San Franciscans, when you talk about homelessness, it seems like a problem that's insurmountable and a problem that they don't see changing because, unfortunately, most of our San Franciscans see what isn't working. They see the people on the street that either are not being served or don't want to be served. And so I said to the mayor that at 56 at the time, now 57, I was a little too old to be the director of losing and that I wanted to set a different standard. And so we bantered and hope arose from that discussion. And I feel very hopeful about what we're doing.
Well, let's talk about what you're doing, because I know certainly what's gotten a good deal of publicity is a program up in Seattle that both you and Mayor Lee are, I guess you visited it, he's about to visit it. This is so-called wet housing, where they have a couple hundred units for recovering alcoholics. Some more cynical call it bunks for drunks, but what's the results here? Tell us about it, first of all, and what does it bode?
For 6 years in Seattle, there's been 75 units of wet housing or pretreatment housing. It's 1811 East Lake, and I went to see it, and it was the city's response to chronic public inebriates. Here in San Francisco, we spend $13.5 million annually on our top 225 chronic inebriates. That's money that we're spending on emergency room treatment, sobering centers, shelters, jail, police, paramedic time. We're spending about $60,000 per our top 225 highest flyers, highest users in multiple systems. And so what they did in Seattle was to build 75 new units of housing and really make it low barrier, low threshold. Say, hey, you're a serious alcoholic. We're not expecting you to change. But just last month, the Journal of Public Health published a study of the Seattle housing that showed that 40% reduction on average of alcohol consumption. Now, that meant going from 20 drinks a day, 20 or 22 drinks a day to 12. Certainly, that's not a teetotaler. But what it does mean is that, you know, individuals live in a housing setting. They have the right to spend their own money from benefits that they receive. And if they're not quite able and probably not a great thing for the neighborhood for them to totter down to the store, the staff does go out and will make a shopping run once a week and individuals drink. I mean, but the...
It's like needle exchange.
It is a harm reduction model, but I think that the reality is if we could generate 200 units of this housing in San Francisco, and the reason we want the mayor to go is to see this and to see how it happens, and actually the business community was the biggest catalyst for this in Seattle, I think it would have a dramatic difference. And frankly, it's not good for these individuals. For someone to fall, it could be $100,000 or $150,000 just for a head injury that could take place or more. And so I really haven't encountered that much cynicism about it. I've had some questions about it, and people have told me that as they've heard it discussed, at first they kind of seem a little grumpy about it, but as they think about it, they think that it really is in the best interest. And Seattle, in its first year, saved $4 million, and I think this is money that we can spend on better outcomes for individuals.
Well, as long as we're talking about people being grumpy, there is still a lot of, well, more than grumpiness, consternation, concern about panhandling, and what do you got in mind to ameliorate it?
Well, I think that for me, panhandling is something that I am still exploring. So yesterday, for
example— And forgive me, they're not all homeless who are panhandling.
No, that's true. It's a very complex subject. It's a subject where I'll honestly say, Michael, I have not given money out on the street. It's something that I have not done. I guess I should be even more honest and say that I saw someone that I know in the Castro this past week and had a long conversation with him, and I did wind up giving him money. So maybe there's but it's someone that I know well, and I know he's housed and I know what's going on with him. But I'm really listening and learning. In the Union Square area, I think there's an effort that was underway with my predecessor to look at an education campaign for people. Many years in the Castro ago, there was an effort called Create Change, Don't Give It Away. But it became sort of a polarizing point between those that felt that you're criminalizing homelessness and you're really marginalizing people. I went to Glide the Sunday after I was announced to take this position, and someone that I love and admire, Cecil Williams, stood up, and without any prompting from me, that's what he sermonized about. He talked about looking away from people. And so I think I have to try and balance and better understand things, but there are legitimate concerns that people have about individuals that may be coming from outside the city to panhandle, and the fact that there are people that we have probably helped to house that are still economically on the margins and need what they're able to get on the street. So for the individual that I gave $20 to, who I know well, he and I talked very seriously about trying to get him some employment. And so for some individuals, that's where it is we've got to really focus on what type of employment could they qualify for and could they do, and can we make them more sustaining? And at the end of the day, this is what my goal is to have better outcomes for individuals and families, whether they're in shelter, supportive housing, public housing, or affordable housing. And I can't walk away from this issue, but right now I don't have any specific answer to it.
Well, you want more citizen involvement. You've said this publicly. You want more citizen dedication. You want to get religious groups, in addition to Glide and many others who are already committed, and volunteers more involved in this problem. What do we do about compassion fatigue? I mean, some people just don't necessarily give money to panhandlers, but they also don't necessarily feel the kind of compassion that you and others feel for the homeless.
We live in a city where everyone is an expert about homelessness. There's not a person that lives in San Francisco that doesn't understand it at a very deep level. You understand it because you see people on the street and you question why the city doesn't do a better job. For some of us, we have family members or friends that have fallen into homelessness, and we deeply understand the difficulties at times.
More family members than ever
facing
before,
substance
in fact,
abuse,
right?
And mental illness. And so I just want to say to you, that's the reason I'm sitting on this show. I think too often in politics, people have been afraid to sit down and have a clear-headed, honest conversation and say, neither can we press release this away. We can't cut enough ribbons to make this problem go away. But we also can't do as some politicians have done in San Francisco and say, you know what? There's just too much controversy, too much polarization about this issue. Let's just leave it alone and hope that people don't push us. And what's great about Mayor Lee is that he has ushered in an era in city government where there isn't the polarization. I've been back in the building now for 2 weeks, and it's just a very different time right now. People do not seem to get up every day to walk into that building to keep somebody else from being successful. I think that the mayor is a collaborator. He's someone who understands the people who work for the city. He has not introduced a very political tone to things, but I think that he has established some building blocks that I hope to use in addressing this problem. For me, Jennifer Friedenbach, who's the director of the Coalition on Homelessness, she's my friend. She went out to lunch with me on my birthday because I wanted to talk to her about how we work together. Is she going to kick my tail and disagree with me about things? Of course she is. But I think that we're post this era of division. And one of the ideas I have, Michael—
You work with Paul Bowden too?
I worked with Paul in the past. We were a little more combatants. I'd be intrigued as to where Paul sees me. You know, for me personally, I didn't support sit and lie. I think that there are laws on the books that address behavior, whether it's drug paraphernalia, urination, aggressive panhandling. There are laws on the books. But those laws are not enforced because we haven't reformed the front end of the justice system. George Gascon, as our DA, has established neighborhood DAs. That's not about putting people in jail. It's making people accountable for their behavior. So I think that we're really in a unique era and period right now, if the economy approves a little bit, that if we can do things like wet housing, if we can really address family homelessness, which is so invisible to people because they don't see families on the
street. I'm asking about that because you got an estimate of 2,000 kids in San Francisco, and with the economic downturn, I mean, this is a problem throughout the Bay Area. It's a problem throughout the country. Family homelessness going up and children being homeless.
It absolutely is. But the two things I'd want to say is I know for this mayor and I think for us as San Franciscans, having a child come to school in the morning and not know where they're going to sleep that night is unacceptable. And that is something that had evolved with us. And I went to the National Alliance to End Homeless Conference in Los Angeles about 3 weeks ago before I started this job. And what is going on in the homeless arena for families is called rapid rehousing. And that's really the notion that no matter how good a program or shelter service is, that it is debilitating for a family to go into a shelter environment, that it destabilizes the family and creates many, many problems. And that's not to say there are not great programs out there. But what you saw with President Obama and stimulus money is that they put money into rapid rehousing, which basically means you spend whatever money you have to try and stabilize a family. If you've got back due rent, PG&E, whatever it is, and if that doesn't succeed, you don't move them to shelter. You have an inventory of apartments that you've got on reserve and you move them immediately into housing and stabilizing them. And the outcomes have definitely seemed to be better, the Obama administration. And that's something, Michael, is, you know, under the prior presidents, under these Republican administrations, not a whole lot of focus on this, but I've been very excited and surprised to see the federal government stepping up in ways that I haven't seen. Just yesterday,
the federal money's coming online now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and in very inventive and creative new ways. For those of you who may go by 150 Otis Street, which is, you know, down near Civic Center, you see it when you're driving on the Central Freeway, and you see this tall building that looks like a ghost building because the windows are blown out of it, and that's a longtime city-owned building, and it's very exciting that Swords to Plowshares is working on housing there, and it's got federal funds in it, and it's going to be over 100 units of housing for homeless veterans. And so the federal government, you see a partnership. Just yesterday, I was at HUD and the VA sitting together and talking about chronic homeless veterans and what they're doing. And what they've done is modeled after the Section 8 housing voucher program. They've created something called VASH, VA Supportive Housing. And we're battling right now to get about 60 units that we need as project-based units. And we'll be opening this building at the end of the year. Do you know that one out of every four African-American veterans in America is homeless? That is a damning number.
Our guest is Bevin Dufty. He's the Director of Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement in San Francisco. Grand opening today of Casa Quesada,
yes.
52-unit building providing housing to those who were formerly homeless. It's a collaborative project of Dolores Street Community Services, Mission Neighborhood Resource Center, and the Bernal Heights Neighborhood Center. And San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee is scheduled to attend. That's over 35 Woodward Street. So things are happening, and lots of things are happening. And in fact, you had mentioned before that you were in favor of the opposed to the voter favored ban on blocking sidewalks, but back Care Not Cash, and now there's talk about the Bill Graham Center, which has had quarterly services since Gavin Newsom was mayor, being open on a daily basis.
Well, it wouldn't be at Bill Graham, but Project Homeless Connect, which Mayor Newsom initiated, and now over 100 cities have their own Project Homeless Connects. And so quarterly, we establish sort of a one-stop at Bill Graham, and they offer everything from eyeglasses, reading and prescription glasses, dental services, signing up to get your driver's license, DMV is there, legal assistance, medical, all these, signing up for housing, just getting a meal. And it's been a very transformative experience. It has been a huge partnership because different companies come in and help to support it. And at this most recent one, California Pacific Medical Center was a sponsor and had over 100 staff people there. And I stood there working the line to make the initial referral to get people to a volunteer that would take their case intake and establish which areas they needed to go within Bill Graham. And we had over 1,600 people came. And it was really inspiring. And now we're taking that, and our Department of Public Health under our director, Barbara Garcia, Sophia is starting Everyday Connect. And so at 25 Van Ness, down by Van Ness and Market, we're going to be pioneering an effort where people are going to be able to come in and make daily connections around, particularly around dental care. That was a huge issue. It was really moving to see. And I'm going to be out there sort of campaigning and championing with our dental community to try and get them more involved. As you can imagine, many people you see on the street either have very serious dental problems, which can have other serious health implications, or they need dentures. And so that's something that is done at Project Olmos Connect, but the need is so much higher. So I'm excited. Hopefully in the next few months, you'll see Everyday Connect starting.
Talk about high needs and things that you're excited about. I understand next month you're going to have an announcement on HIV diagnosed and maybe even after that, schizophrenia?
Well, so what you have is that the Social Security Administration has been working with our Department of Public Health. We have an amazing health department, and Barbara Garcia is just an incredible leader, as is Trent Rohr, who's at our Human Services Agency. But what Barbara's been working with Social Security is a presumptive SSI diagnosis. You know, SSI is disability and it's a higher level of income. But if someone is both schizophrenic and homeless, that they would have a presumptive diagnosis as qualifying for SSI and wouldn't have to wait for months and months. You know, this is very important work that a lot of agencies do to advocate for their clients who really have serious disabilities. And the relationship to AIDS is that for many years, you know, individuals who had AIDS, and as you know, the morbidity was so high early in this epidemic, but eventually they moved and said, if you have AIDS, a diagnosis, you ought to automatically qualify for SSI because they knew how important it was to stabilize people. And only two cities are partnering with the Social Security Administration. And of course, we're very fortunate that Leader Nancy Pelosi is our leader, both in Congress and here locally. And certainly she's been involved in many of our successes.
This could be a model for any city, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that, again, Michael, that's the engagement. Just people knowing that the federal government is partnering with our city to say, why wait 5 months for someone to get a level of income where they could go and get housing? Not, you know, maybe not market rate. They, you know, they're not going to be able to walk into an apartment in every part of this town, but that they would not have to languish either in shelters or on our streets, you know, knowing that they're both schizophrenic and homeless.
But we have a scarcity of affordable housing. I mean, this is true. The stock of housing is a problem just about everywhere, especially for low-income people. And you can see public housing adding to the homelessness problem because long-term vacancies in low-income affordable housing projects are rampant.
Well, and this is a very complex issue, and I do want to say—
I mean, it's much a problem in Oakland, really, is it? Maybe more than it is here.
Yes, and I can really speak about San Francisco, and I do want to say that, you know, here I've come in to work with Mayor Lee, who is a colleague and friend over many years, and he's been in office for more than a year now, and I am very impressed that he's got some really senior people within his administration that are working on a financing mechanism long-term, and the mayor is looking to go to the ballot to create consensus and collaboration, as was done around the retirement system and to create a mechanism to fund affordable housing because the federal government's not doing what it's done. But, Michael, let's look at San Francisco. San Francisco looked at what we did with Hope 6 with public housing. And we've talked about how my agenda is also about outcomes for public housing families. But people can go around town and they see Bernal dwellings. They see Hayes Valley. They see the developments on North Beach that have been rebuilt and that they're much healthier, much stronger communities. And San Francisco pioneered, and we have Hope SF. Right now, we're working out at Hunter's View and Hunter's Point to rebuild housing. We're going to have 115 units that are going to come online later this year. And it's very exciting that about 15 of those units are going to be workforce housing. The rest are all for residents. And, you know, we're making a difference. We don't have all the answers, but I do think that the priorities of this city are expressed in helping people that are in financial need and needing housing. And I think that this mayor is very committed to coming up with not just a one-time tool, because as you might recall, Willie Brown went to the ballot when he was extremely popular in 1996 and got a $100 million affordable housing bond, the first ever in our city's history. Then the next two times that mayors went to the ballot, because it's a two-thirds vote, they lost. And I think Mayor Lee is not going to – he's not going to lose at this one. He's going to make it work.
Bevin Nufty here with us in studio, Director of Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement in San Francisco. And I'm going to open the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join us. And, of course, we're talking about housing problems and problems related to homelessness in San Francisco. But as you can pretty much glean and understand, these are problems that certainly affect most cities here, especially big cities in the Bay Area. You're free to join us now. Our toll-free number available to you is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls, so if you'd like to contribute to this conversation or if you have a question or any kind of comment, feel free to do so. It's 866-733-6786, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. And, of course, you can also communicate with us on our Facebook page. You're talking, Bevin, about accountability and measuring homeless services. What's the way you plan on engaging that and doing that?
Well, our city controller has a city services audit function, and Ben Rosenfield is our controller, and that function has been established over the past 8 years. And so I definitely intend to look at the controller's office to partner with us to look at successful outcomes. We also need to look at where the numbers are. We have not done a good enough job on focusing on homelessness in the Bayview area. The Bayview, after the Tenderloin and South of Market, is really the second largest population of homeless individuals. And I work very closely with the United Council of Human Services, Gwen Westbrook, who's out there. She's been out there many years feeding people and has a drop-in. And Providence Church, Calvin Jones, Reverend Jones, has done an excellent job and also has some shelter services that they provide. But the city is going to be going out later this year to fund a residential facility in the Bayview. And I'm really excited about that. And I think that that's extremely important. One thing, Michael, when we talk about engagement is that when I went to the National Alliance to End Homelessness Conference in Los Angeles, there were two individuals that were there from Elaine Pinnell Real Estate. And I was so surprised. And I saw them and they were here from San Francisco. And I said, I'm so intrigued that you're here at this conference about family homelessness. And the gentleman looked at me and he said, why would you be surprised? He says, my whole life has been about housing and homes for people. And he says, and I'm fascinated. This is a problem that has really intrigued me and I want to come and learn more. And it gave me sort of the idea, and I'm sort of talking to different providers about what about bringing in the real estate community and having quarterly open houses and letting people see some of the housing that's been built. And if that succeeds, I'd like to have a Don't Look Away Day where we have San Franciscans come and see some of the things that they've helped us fund. If people drive by Fulton and Grove, you will see the Julian and Ray Richardson apartments. I know you know Julian and Ray Richardson, that they were lions in the African-American community in the Fillmore.
Marcus
Bookstores for many, many years. And this development is named after them. It's David Baker Architecture. It's a gorgeous building. And guess what? The people who live in it are some of the most hardcore on-the-street homeless individuals who are managed by Central City Case Management. And it's really amazing. And so what I would like to do is to get people who sell homes and make dreams for people to come and see this. Just yesterday, I was at the Star at 18th and Mission, which has been there for 10 years, and it's in such good shape. And 54 people lead such more productive lives. And I think that there's a separation. We need to let our citizens see what's working. And then I think that they'll have hope and faith to help us address what isn't working.
Well, your enthusiasm is contagious and, you know, your innovative ideas. I mean, you're certainly well known for these innovative ideas. And what would you say, though, to people who they say, yeah, Dufty's a guy who comes up with a lot of ideas, but some of them are pretty loopy, I guess, you know. having life coaches on the Munis and Virgin America wraps inside of 14 Mission buses. Yeah, I mean, all these kinds of things, Weight Watchers for chubby city employees. If people take these and they frame them in a way that says, this is a loopy guy, what do you say to that?
I say, hey, you know what? My job is to be creative. My job is not to have every idea be a winner. That's what George Bush did, and look where it got us. He believed everything he thought was magic. I don't believe that. But I do believe that we have to be creative, and I think that that inspires other people to have ideas, and people are bringing me those ideas and bringing them to the mayor as well, and there's nothing wrong. And you know what? I don't mind criticism. I don't mind, you know, maybe that's why it's good. The mayor said he wanted somebody with gravitas in this role. He and Steve Cava said that 4 times when they talked to me about taking this job, and I kept saying, I know I gained weight running for mayor, but I hope I'm not that heavy.
Gravitas usually doesn't have to do with girth, but in your case, we'll make an exception. Actually, I know you want ideas from the public, so we're going to get them. In fact, I'm going to invite them. And again, you may want to join us in conversation. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or call 866-733-6786. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, former San Francisco supervisor and one-time mayoral candidate Bevin Dufty here with us in studio discussing his new appointment as, well, what used to be called Homelessness Czar, what's now called Director of Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement in San Francisco. And he's giving us a number of his proposals, and we're going to go to your calls here and find out some ideas that you might have. Inquiring minds need to know, though, how did you become the poster boy for that HIV poster for Truvada? You don't have HIV. I mean,
no, and that was it. It was really looking at getting people involved in clinical trials, looking at vaccines, and I'm someone that I've lost many friends to this epidemic, and I think that we're not a divided community, that people are both positive and negative, need to be involved. And I think something San Franciscans can be proud of is the way in which we pioneered needle exchange. And you talked about harm reduction, and so we have one of the lowest transmission rates for people that are IV drug users. But I have done finger painting, butt prints for gay men's health. There's pretty much nothing I will not do to support AIDS awareness and support services.
Listener asked a question before we go to our calls that may be quite germane to what many people have on their minds. Paul says, the problem of homelessness really bothers me. I feel terrible about the issue, but I don't know what to do about it. What does the guest recommend the common person should do about it? I also work with foreign visitors, and the problem of homelessness is a bit of an embarrassment for me as a representative of the city and country.
Yeah, Paul, you're right. I went to Berlin last year, and I was everywhere over 4 days, and I didn't see a homeless person in the time I was there. And I asked questions about it because I was there for a conference on gay neighborhoods, and it was really telling to me. And I do think that to a certain extent that those of us that live here in the city that we come become accustomed. So I'm making an effort to really look directly at people and to engage them when someone asks me, and I'm going to focus on talking to people. And I think that
Paul wants to know, what can people do, though? I mean, if somebody said, as he's asking, what can I do? I'm just an ordinary citizen.
I would say the first thing is really to talk to someone that you see. If it does, talk to them, and then you can call me. But I think there are other things you can do. Get involved with your church. Our Interfaith Council in San Francisco has really done amazing things, such as a shelter program, and I intend to partner with them because I think we need a mix of compassion and pragmatism. And I think that their organizations, Larkin Street Youth Services is a great example, and that I support financially. There are a number of different groups that are working here. I just went to St. Anthony's Dining Room. I think, Paul, if you went and helped serve meals for a day, and it's really not that complicated, you go in and you take the trays to the clients, and it just really connects you. I think that's an important thing. We've really just become so polarized and view this as an unsolvable issue, and I think that there's small steps that each of us can take. St. Anthony's is building a new dining room that is going to have housing over it. And so just get involved in a small way. Come out to Project Homeless Connect. Look up Project Homeless Connect online and come and join us. And I think that that's the most important thing. All of us have a role. You know as much as I do and any expert in this city about what's going on. And so take that first step.
A couple of related questions, and then we'll go to calls. Diane says, please ask Mr. Dufty how he came to be appointed homelessness czar and what his qualifications are. I just don't get it. And another listener writes, given Mr. Dufty's intended policy to be more lenient with homeless alcoholics and allow them shelter even if they haven't quit drinking, I'd like to know what his qualifications are other than serving as a legislative aide regarding chemical dependency and the treatment of chronic alcoholics.
Well, as a member of the Board of Supervisors, I actually helped start a program that is led by Larkin Street Youth Services that is known as the Castro Young Adult Housing Program. And so it's a program that houses over 20 individuals at 15th and Sanchez, where we 15th Market in Sanchez, where we have a residential hotel. And we created a supportive housing program that was supported by the neighbors and merchants, and it's been extremely successful over 7 years. When the city librarian, Luis Herrera, came to me as a member of the budget committee and proposed a tripling of his security at the main library, I sat down and said, Luis, yes, I've gotten the emails from people that tell me that folks were washing their laundry in the restrooms at the library and that it was, you know, uninviting and unwelcoming to other patrons. And I said to him, you have a baseline budget. And guess what? As much as you have a problem being in the Tenderloin and having people coming to you every day, guess what? The upside is that it's a lot easier to case manage people if you know where they are every day. It's really hard for outreach workers to go and make an appointment and tell somebody to meet them at Taylor and Ellis and have that person be there at 10 o'clock the next day. So working with Luis, we hired two case managers, and it's one of the most successful programs that's being replicated around the world. I'm a politician. I've worked in legislation and government my entire life. I've been about innovation. I've been about customer service. And so the mayor sat down with me. He said to me after the election that he had always respected my work in city government. And guess what? I've been doing it for 19 years. I was a board of supervisors.
This is where I was a supervisor. Right after you battled him for that job, in fact.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, that's what democracy is about, is about choice. And I was the best choice I could
be. It's like Obama going to Hillary Clinton, right?
I don't think I have her gravitas. But he came to me and said that he was interested in me taking on this role. And, you know, there are parts of it that are difficult. It's not like running a department. I don't have command. I have to work with everyone from the school district to the health department to the housing authority, the human services agency. I was yesterday with adult probation. So I think I'm perfectly qualified to do this job because I'm visible and I'm accountable. Let me tell you, when I walk in the Tenderloin because people saw my commercials from there, everybody on the street knows who I am, and I think that's a good quality in this job.
And we're going to go to your calls, and we begin, Jamie, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Devin.
Good morning, Jamie.
I just wanted to give you some kudos for the wet housing thing because it's a classic example of being able to do well by doing good. I'm familiar with the Seattle experience, and, you know, here you have a situation where you're fighting the stigma against alcoholism as a disease. You're making treatment more accessible to people. Even if they're drinking, they're off the streets drinking. They're not out there bothering tourists. And one thing that you guys didn't talk about very much is these people don't have just one problem. They typically have mental illness, physical health problems, you know, so they become much more accessible to that kind of treatment. And, yeah, I just wanted to raise those points and thank you for, you know, you didn't talk about fighting the stigma against alcoholism as a disease, but here's a case where what other disease do we penalize people for having symptoms?
Yeah, Jamie, that's a great point.
Yeah, he makes a number of very good points, and particularly the point about how interrelated many of the problems are for people who have chronic alcoholism with respect to other problems.
Well, for these 75 units at 1811 Eastlake, the year prior to them moving into housing, they had 10,000 ambulance calls. And after a year of living indoors, there were 400 ambulance calls to 1811 Eastlake. They had a nurse on duty, and she'd been there all 6 years. She's amazing. And that's one of the magical things about wet housing is that the staff that are drawn to it really understand chronic public inebriates. And it's a very different population in some respects from individuals that have other types of substance abuse or mental illness. And that community there,
They do a lot of monitoring, really, don't they? I mean,
they do.
A constant, almost vigilant monitoring.
But I honestly would say, and I've talked to Barbara Garcia about this, that we would probably have a slightly stronger medical component, maybe have a nurse on duty 16 hours a day. And I think, again, that would even bring down the need for ambulance calls even more. Of these 75 residents, on average every year, 10% become clean and sober, and some continue to live there, which is amazing to me, and 10% die every year. We know that it is harder to get people off of alcohol than it is off of heroin, and it is very, very, very difficult. Although I did hear our adult probation department has been talking to public health because there is a new injectable medicine that's called Valvitron, which really cuts off your stimulators to alcohol, and it's something that a couple of communities are trying around the country, and it's something that we may try as well.
Carrie joins us. Carrie, you're on. Welcome.
Good morning. I've been a psychiatric nurse practitioner working with the Department of Public Health in San Francisco for many years and now working with the Harm Reduction Therapy Center, really engaging the clients that we're talking about today, severe persistent mental illness, HIV, chronic homelessness, and really excited to be listening to this conversation. I just think there's so many different issues facing this population, and where I've seen the most success is really, you know, coming from a harm reduction approach where we're engaging people that are still actively using drugs and alcohol and aggressively trying to work with them around their mental health symptoms, because for many, many years, and still the trend nationwide, is to not engage in mental health treatment with people that are still actively using drugs and alcohol and or using medications. And I've seen a lot of success with medications where people are still using in reduction, and just feel like we need to kind of take a shift in how we think about this form of treatment. We're obviously a harm reduction-based system in San Francisco, which is great, but it's still not the trend nationally. And also, I think when we're looking at housing and new housing developments, I, you know, 90% of my patients are either living in shelters or in the single-room occupancy hotels in the Tenderloin, which just is not really a healthy, viable living option for people. But people with just Social Security income, there's really no other options for people. And it makes it very difficult for people to maintain sobriety or get better treatment for the mental health systems when living in SRO in the Tenderloin.
Well, Carrie, first I want to say you're my hero because you're a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I'm a little biased because my daughter's mom, Rebecca, is an NP, and so I think NPs do amazing work. And I want to validate what you're saying. Care Not Cash was a game changer for San Francisco. We said giving people $400 a month was not – it wasn't a humane, it wasn't a thoughtful thing to do because it was just a roller coaster that people were doing from shelter to briefly a residential hotel and alcohol and drugs. And we said that housing first, that we needed to get people indoors. And we've improved the housing stock of the residential hotels. But I think what you're speaking to is that the SROs, that they can be isolating for people and that people need to be engaged. And I want to commend Central City Hospitality House. If you walk by 6th and Market, and yes, it's hard scrabble, but you know, Dottie's True Blue Cafe is there. But just a couple of doors down, Central City Hospitality House has an art program that people can come in and do art every day. And it's so busy and to go there. And so I think part of what you're speaking to is also that we've got to think about healthier outcomes for people and engaging people that are in supportive housing to see if they can pursue employment or other things so that they're not, you know, really kind of devolving back into using again. I so commend you.
And Carrie, thank you for the call. I'm wondering, do you know the percentage of homeless who are alcoholic, Bevan?
No.
Maybe somebody has that figure. I'd be curious to know. Here's a listener who says, I do volunteer work at a faith-based shelter program here in Marin County. Yes, we have homeless too. I also carry around several McDonald's gift cards in my wallet and hand those out instead of cash because I know how the money will be spent. I'd rather give grocery store cards, but they could be used for alcohol or redeemed for cash. I will never give out cash. Is there a way to implement some kind of program where people can help the homeless directly like this, but be sure it will really help them in the right way? Maybe something involving local grocery stores and farmers markets with non-refundable cards.
I think that's a great idea. I know that Supervisor Scott Weiner proposed that for the recycling centers where people take in recyclables, you know, homeless individuals, and it is a challenge in our city that people are sort of dumpster diving, and people that do that are not necessarily homeless individuals because Assemblywoman Fiona Ma went after kind of the small-scale businesses that are going through the recyclables and getting them. But Supervisor Weiner's proposal was that perhaps instead of getting cash at these recycling centers, that people would get debit cards. And I think there is some concern that some people do need cash for rent, but I think that it's an excellent idea. And I do want to invite, I mean, we have a tech mayor. I mean, I think most mayors want to be tech mayors, but Mayor Lee has done with Twitter, with Zynga, Mark Benioff and his wife Lynn of Salesforce, you know, provided $1.5 million to address family homelessness. So I want to really invite him. I'm already meeting with technology companies looking at it. I mean, some folks came to see me and were looking at an application around homelessness that would allow people to crowdfund. And that was the interesting thing, Michael. When I went to this National Alliance to End Homelessness, I went to a conference that really focused on all these emerging technologies. And they had a study that showed that 100% of the people in a Seattle homeless shelter had Facebook pages and the extent to which people are using Twitter. And there was a photo that this presenter put up of a homeless man at a shelter where Michelle Obama was serving a meal and he'd pulled out his smartphone and had taken a picture of her. And the fact that you know, yes, you can argue, like, should he have a smartphone? Well, the reality is it doesn't matter
what
I think.
The right wing makes a big deal out of things like that. You know, they say, oh, you're giving money to people and they have smartphones or, you know, this is an indication that maybe you're giving money to people who don't need it. They use those kind of symbols rapidly.
And that's what they do. And maybe what we can do being San Francisco is say, how do we use technology to do better by people, to do better by people that live, work, visit, and do business in this city, and to do better by people that are struggling because of either addictions or poverty and have circumstances. And I think that it's exciting. And I want to talk about it and say we don't have all the answers. And so if you're in this arena and you've got ideas, come our way.
Well, I told you you'd be getting a lot of ideas from listeners here. And Kurt writes, why not fine owners as they do in England for each month their property is not being rented and occupied? He's talking about vacant homes in San Francisco. I guarantee the simple no-cost technique will have positive impact on homelessness. I'm going to go to more your emails and web comments, but let me go more to your calls first. And Maury joins us. Good morning.
Morning. I'm calling. I really am sympathetic to the situation that you're discussing. I just had kind of a question. I am employed full time. I have, you know, lots of friends who were employed full time and then lost their jobs. I have a friend who has three kids and lost her job because she was trying to take care of her kids. And I hear that, you know, you're giving money to people who have trouble with substance abuse and have trouble with psychological problems, which I totally support. But I also think maybe we're looking at the wrong end of the problem, because when you have people who are fully employed and then lose their jobs and then they have no money and then they end up becoming homeless, would it be, you know, an interesting idea to start looking at maybe helping those folks out to prevent them from getting into the position where we have, you know, real epidemic?
Yeah, you might. We talked earlier about rapid rehousing, and that is something that we're doing in San Francisco, and we hope to expand upon it. It exactly speaks to what you're describing, which is perhaps a single head of household with a child or two, loses employment, doesn't have a safety net in order to maintain their housing, you know, call 311 and come to the city. And we have programs in which we will endeavor to help you maintain that housing so that we don't have that family go into shelter. So absolutely, there are programs and services. Season of Sharing, as you know, the Chronicle Initiative, very, very important and has been part of stabilizing many families. So I encourage people, if you know families in this circumstance, to call 311.
And thank you for the call, Maury. We'll go to Maury calls in just a minute. Here's Julie from Guerneville, who says, I'm enjoying this interview very much. Love the young man's enthusiasm. Please get him to laugh again. What a fabulous, full-hearted laugh. Never heard a politician laugh with such sincerity.
Didn't work so well at the ballot box.
She finally concludes saying, I would love these ideas spread throughout the Bay Area and beyond.
Thank you.
Joshua says, first, I'd like to congratulate Bevin on his appointment. I really am hopeful these issues will deserve the attention they deserve. My question for Bevin, and actually I think you've answered this, San Francisco, famous for being a tech-focused city. You're also a famously creative public policy thinker. Is there a role for technology to address homelessness? And you've just, I think, answered that a moment ago. Here's Judy, though, who says, I would like to give a shout-out to Episcopal Community Services, which has some wonderful homeless programs that seem to be working. I volunteered in the library and the shelter on Polk Street and was amazed at the complexity of the stories I heard and at the care that folks received.
So, Michael, let's stay with this for a moment, because I want to acknowledge that Supervisor Jane Kim, who has now served, I believe, I guess she's in her second year now, representing District 6, which has the largest homeless population. And I'm a big fan and believer in Jane's. But Jane went and spent a night at Next Door. So that's the ECS shelter that's on 1001 Polk Street. And it was a very moving experience for her because of the compassion that people showed one another. And she is very focused on this. She's an important partner, as all the supervisors are, for me to work with.
Have you done a night yourself?
I have not stayed a night, but I have gone to I went to MSC South. So that's MSC North. MSC South is run by St. Vincent de Paul Society. And the week before I started this job, there was a stabbing that took place there. And I went there that night. And that is our largest shelter. So there are 340 beds, I believe, at MSC South. And there are 60 chairs in the drop-in center where individuals, if they can't get referred into housing, can, you know, sleep in their chair or just be someplace safe indoors. And I have to say that I was very moved. It was a very difficult set of circumstances. And, you know, I believe that the individuals were known to one another where this stabbing, it was a fatal stabbing, took place. Very unusual, although there is violence
there
in shelters.
There is violence. But there's also a lot of community interaction and
people
symbiosis.
People were so respectful and the cleanliness at this shelter. And there were things that, you know, again, over 19 years, I've paid a lot of visits to programs like this. And I do believe we're moving in the right direction. And the advocates in the Coalition on Homeless are about shelter monitoring. I think they've had a lot to do with this. So I want to say this is not just the city deciding, oh, we just want to do better. I mean, we've been challenged by advocates, and I want to acknowledge and thank them for that.
Here's a web comment. Listener writes, equip old buses with shower and laundry facilities like they do when there's a natural disaster to be able to start the day clean, a positive start to the day. After that, it seems it needs to be a one person at a time effort. I've been working in the USQ area for nearly 30 years, and you see the same people sometimes for years on end. I do pick one person I occasionally give money to when I see. Another listener writes, a year ago, I changed my career path from the private sector to the public sector. I love my job. I love working for our city, but I hate working in Civic Center. The homeless problem in this area is out of control. I feel like I'm being punished every day as I walk to work for choosing the public sector. I shouldn't have to watch every step to make sure I don't step in urine or feces.
And let's speak to that for a minute, because I do think, and it's a combination of things. Let's be honest, because I tried to have a headquarters at 6th and Market, and after 5 months, people wouldn't come there, and I would go, you know, I would enter at 7th Street. I would try and go to get onto Muni at the underground station, the fencing that was taking place there. I mean, it's a combination of things. There definitely is an opportunism that we see about low-level crime taking place in San Francisco. And an honest discussion of it is, I think that the sentences are tougher in both Alameda and San Mateo County. Again, I come back to George Gascon, who I think, because he's arrested, locked up people much of his career, he's trying to do things smarter and better. And he really has focused on this. But, you know, some of it, yes, is homelessness, and some of it is criminal activity that is using the homelessness in the area to mask it. And I very much do agree. I think Civic Center and the Tenderloin, we have to focus on these areas, and we have to have better conditions on the street. There are so many families that live in the Tenderloin. I'm such an advocate for DeMariac Academy, which is a middle school, which is right there next to St. Boniface at Jones and Golden Gate. And at that school, it's an incredible 4-8 school where the sisters pay for any high school that these kids get into. I mean, what a ticket that is for these kids if they get into Urban or Sacred Heart or SI, you know, that they will pay for their high school. But do you know that CPMC has to provide 10 volunteer trauma counselors because of what these kids see? On every day, they have 2 trauma counselors that are available for what these kids see. There are thousands upon thousands of children and families that live in the Tenderloin, and it is unacceptable the conditions that they live in, and we can do better.
Our guest again, if you just joined us here on Forum this morning, is Bevan Dufty, Director of the Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement in San Francisco. And let's engage another caller. Robin, join us. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm a recent resident to San Francisco. I've been there about a year now. My girlfriend lives over on 6th Street, and we've noticed it's a real hotbed for activity, as everybody knows. I'm just wondering what kind of treatment or city-sponsored treatment is going on 6th Street. And also, I'm a bit conflicted about the amount of money that the city spends on what I guess consider people that have made incorrect life decisions. And I feel like that money should be funneled more into education, for example, elementary schools and things like that, that would help the middle class and actually make the city much more, you know, a great place to live for families. And I wonder how your department and the rest of the city feels about 6th Street and the constant problems that have been there. I mean, it's been 10 years since I've been going down there, and to think about all the lost opportunity costs from that situation there. And I think if anyone that doesn't agree that most of those hotels are a lightning rod for nefarious activity and actually the blight that blights all of mid-market, I think they're on another planet. So I hope the city, you included, will take a good hard look at that. And honestly, the new police station that's been talked about for years, I don't think that's going to do anything. I mean, the real problem there is it really are those hotels. And I hate to be kind of a jerk about it, but when you kind of try to balance money and limited resources, I really feel like it should go towards the future and not necessarily trying to save everybody. And I'll take your comments off the air. And again, I apologize for being a little bit negative on it.
No. You're pushing because you want us to do a better job, so that you're not a jerk about it. You're taking the time to call, and I appreciate that. Why I talked about wet housing is we're spending money unproductively, picking somebody up with an ambulance 5 times a day on 6th Street. And I think if you got the numbers, a lot of the top 225 are right there on 6th Street. That's just not productive. I think San Franciscans want us to make an intervention. They just want it to be a fiscally responsible intervention. When I talk about rapid rehousing, I think the debilitation that you put a family through putting it in shelter over a sustained period of time rather than back in an independent apartment living situation, it's not financially wise. And so that's why I brought up the controller's office, that I think we really have to look at interventions that make sense. I've seen studies that say that the average person goes through substance abuse treatment 3.5 times. that's not effective. If we could figure out how to cut that number to two or less, then I think that we're making a difference. And I do think that that's part of my mission and responsibility is, as you say, to make better investments so that there is more money for some of the things to make this a family-friendly city, like investing in education, which our city does do to support our public schools.
And I'd like to get Diana on next. Diana, thanks for waiting. Join us on Forum. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Great. Good morning. Hi. I am a 65-year-old homeless woman. I might say I was made homeless by a San Francisco cop beating me up 20 years ago. But and I always wanted to be a teacher, and I work with the homeless. Actually, maybe some of your listeners. I show up at the Herbst Theater and Intelligent, the Orchid Show, and I tell the people that I buy socks and blankets, and if they want to help me, and I... My dream is to get some land up north for organic farming. I think what we need to do with the people is give them a sense of self-dignity and respect. Now, I know they're going to have the drink. The people who say, they're supporting alcoholism. They've been drinking for 30, 40 years. They're not going to not drink, you know. Have them a drink in the morning. That's the way they... But then, like, hey, let's go to the library. Today, the aquarium is a free day. The museum is free. Let's go there, you know. I think the thing is housing. You need housing. The first person, Paul, people want to help. Maybe you could have some sort of a fund set up. And people who wanted to give $10, $20, $100, $200 just for housing. Housing is the whole, that's the solution. We need that. We need compassion. We need people to interact, to say hello to the homeless person. He's not a stranger. You know, there are some very decent people out there in the street.
Well, we thank you, Diana, for your call.
Appreciate and, Michael, I do want to say we haven't talked a lot this morning about public housing. We have over 5,000 units of public housing, but I'm very focused on outcomes there. We talked about rebuilding of Hunter's View, and I was just at a resident meeting Friday night talking about what people's aspirations are for the new housing that's being built there. But I'm very focused that those individuals that are living on the margins, as another caller suggested, that if we do a better job with outcomes for people living in public housing, those are the people that will wind up on the streets if we're not doing better. So it all kind of fits together. It's a big puzzle, but I'm very hopeful about it. And I'm really excited about being able to talk to you, being able to have your listeners get engaged and think about it and challenge the city to do better. We're not going to get anywhere if we do this in hiding. And I think all of us have a role to play.
Well, I'm going to encourage listeners to go to our website, kqed.org/forum, continue this discussion. And Bevin, I'm going to hand you some web comments and emails here.
Thank you.
For you to take with you some suggestions, some, criticism, you know, the whole range and the whole variety of comments, but I think they'll be useful to you, and I'm sorry to those of you who we didn't have time to get on
here. I'll be at Glide Sunday. I'm going to go to services at Glide, so come join me there. You'll feel very hopeful.
Well, thank you for joining us here. Again, Bevin Dufty, Director of Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement in San Francisco. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our interns are Keith Mansoni, Ernesto Morales, Kyle Palmer, Dana Verinsky, and Catalina V. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.